Redacted Media and GhostHat.net present The Film Illogical Society. In today's episode, we do a You Really Should See This Movie. And now, here's your host, Chris Schultz. And welcome to another podisode of the Filmological Society, where we review movies like no other one does, right?
You can't even compare it. It's just, that's what we do.
It is. And, you know, this one, we used to have a Broadway podcast where we talked only Broadway shows, but with Broadway being paused right now until the end of the year, we couldn't do it. And with me is T.C. DeWitt.
Hello, Chris. Good to be back.
I'm glad you're here. But we lucked out because on July 3rd, Disney Plus dropped a little-known Broadway show called Hamilton. Yeah, so we can do it on the You Haven't Seen What show, which this is. So
yeah, and I suppose it could be even You Haven't Heard What, because, my God, from 2016 to today, the amount of people talking about this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most people, I mean, it's, we'll get into it, but just to kind of point out, like, how many Broadway shows have had this huge of a impact from the people that have never seen it before.
Yeah, it's this the cross appeal. But I'll let you can get to that.
We'll get to that. So this is So it started on Broadway, I believe, late 2015. Sold out shows from the beginning until COVID closed everything down.
Yeah.
Every show was closed out. Hamilton tickets were some of the toughest tickets to get in town. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until, I think, 2018, 2019 when they started opening up, I think, in Chicago and in L.A. San Francisco had one, and they had some traveling shows. They opened down the West End in London. They had plans to open up in Berlin. They had plans to open up in Australia. And then COVID happened. So it already was one of the biggest Broadway shows of all time.
Yeah, this thing is massive.
Massive. And then they filmed it. They filmed three different times. They filmed two live shows in front of an audience, and then they had a third show that they did on their day off for the close-ups.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then... and this was the original cast. This is Lin-Manuel Miranda, Leslie Odom Jr.,
Jonathan Groff.
Yes, like the original Broadway show.
This is about like a month or so before they left, because they wanted to capture all the original people, because a lot of them had been there from the very beginning of the show, like when they were still in the early sessions and they were in off Broadway. They're workshopping it off Broadway.
Yeah.
There were a couple people that were with him from the beginning, and this was it. This was going to end it, and they wanted to make sure they got it filmed. The director of the show also helped direct the movie. So he knew basically the entire show. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote... basically everything. I mean, there was some help, but he wrote basically everything, has said this was the best rehearsed film of all time. Because everyone had about at least a year of doing it on stage.
Of course. Experience. That's very funny. That's very, very well put. Yeah.
Because there were interviews that were being asked, like, were you guys nervous? Was, you know, is there anything you had to do different? Like, everyone knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for a year.
They had perfected every cock of the eyebrow and gesture of the hand, step of the foot. Yeah, it's perfection. That is the benefit of live theater. That's the benefit of of that TV and film just don't get, which is the rehearsal process. That is the magic of theater, is that you spend months and months and months, sometimes weeks and weeks and weeks, but months and months rehearsing and blocking and perfecting and perfecting, so that by the time you get in front of a show or in front of an audience, get the show in front of an audience, ideally there's no mistakes.
Yes. So we'll continue on with this background, and that's a good insight, because I do want to talk a little bit more about the workshop process and the off-Broadway process. Sure. And I think you know that, but before we get there, so this was based on a biography by what's his name, Chernow.
Mm-hmm. Ron Chernow.
So he wrote Alexander Hamilton. He's also written about some of the other founding fathers as well. But it is a big book. I was able to get the book at one point. We'll talk about that in our Founding Father podcast. But but it is a very, very large book. And, you know, Alexander Hamilton is one of the founding fathers, but he never became president. He never became vice president. Mm-hmm. You know, he may have, but his life was cut short.
Right.
This isn't really spoilers, since it happened like in 1800s.
So. funny enough, I'll put it in right here because it's worth noting.
Yeah.
Who shot Alexander Hamilton was already a part of pop culture. Whether people remember this or not, Alexander Hamilton was shot by Aaron Burr, was the very first Got Milk commercial directed by Michael Bay. And it's the guy who's eating a peanut butter sandwich, and he gets, it's the radio contest of who shot Alexander Hamilton.
I remember this.
And he picks up the phone and he's looking around his home, and it's just Hamilton stuff everywhere. And he gets through on the line. They're like, who shot Alexander Hamilton? He's like, and he goes for milk, and there's no milk, and he says got milk, and he doesn't get the prize money. But so the fact that commercial, I think people do remember it. It's buried in some people's subconscious, but that is it's a very watershed moment in commercial advertising, and a great campaign, and and the beginning of Michael Bay's career,
which is crazy. To think about that as
So what I'm saying is, we need a theatrical adaptation of this musical by Michael Bay. Okay? I think that's what I'm saying.
I think so. I mean, they are making a feature film out of it.
They did. There's no need to do this. Stop it. Listen. Hey, listen. No. We do not. Stop it. Just cut it out. Okay? We got it. We got what we needed to get. We don't need to see it again.
It will happen. It will happen. Anyway,
sorry.
So Lin-Manuel was going on. So he had a Tony Award-winning musical.
In the Heights.
Mm-hmm. That was a surprise hit. It was his biggest hit by far. He went on vacation at the airport library. He was kind of looking through books, ran across his Hamilton book and grabbed it. Read two chapters. Already had an idea that this could be a hip-hop musical.
My gosh, a hip-hopera, because there's like maybe five lines of spoken dialogue in this entire piece. This is 2.5 hours of singing.
Singing, rapping, and singing.
Yeah.
So a lot of happenstance, a lot of luck. I mean, just grabbing this book, I mean, it was a known book and all that, but it wasn't, you know, when you think of the founding fathers, there's more interesting ones, right? Like Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin.
Sure. I mean, there's plenty of people who would probably look at all the money we have and go, yeah, there's presidents on all the money. No, there's not. Freaking Ben Franklin was never a president. And Alexander Hamilton, who's on the 10, Hamilton is on the 10, and he was treasurer. That was the peak of his career.
Yeah. And, you know, and for a long time, like that was a good trivia question to drop on people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it took him a year to write the first song, the Alexander Hamilton song.
Wow.
Took him another year to write my shot.
Wow.
Granted, this, you know, he's working on other stuff too and all that, but it took him a year to write that. Because this was in 2009 is when things got started, when he started writing this.
Wow.
So let's talk a little bit, because I don't know this, but you said that you are familiar with this. So what is the process? So you have a play, a musical, whatever, and you wanna try to get it to Broadway, right? That's the ultimate goal for any.
Yeah, that's the pinnacle of theater. Whether it's a straight play, which doesn't have any songs, or a musical, which Broadway has both. It's not just Wicked and Lion King. singing and dancing. So what helped Lin-Manuel, before I discuss, like, or before I can just speak on the whole process itself, Lin-Manuel already had a Broadway career. He had worked with on Jonathan Larson's Tick, Tick, Boom, which was Jonathan Larson, who was made incredibly famous by Rent, Leslie Odom Jr. being a friend of Lin-Manuel as well. So having already made his way into Broadway, it made it that much easier for In the Heights to be the success that it was, and therefore enough faith in Lin-Manuel to then get to do Hamilton. So it does help to already be in the club.
It does. Yeah. It wasn't like he was an unknown.
Right. But as far as the process goes, and this happens every day all around the country, all around the world.
Not right now.
Not right now. But the process of coming up with a musical and finding a community theater or a college or some small theater company willing to let you put it up. And that can be as small as a little 100-person seat theater, similar to what I did in 2013 with a stage musical I wrote. And this isn't about me writing a stage musical. This is about the process, and it's getting it up on stage to work out the kinks, to workshop it, to develop it beyond the page, the written word, the lyrical music, and actually see it performed. So then you can start turning the screws and hammering the nails and getting trimming the fat and other mixed metaphors about building things, and then. It's similar to television shows or movies where you have to pitch it and try to get someone's attention who's willing to let you put it on a bigger stage. And a lot of that comes down to finding someone with money and interest in the arts. So, for example, I am very, you know, friend of a friend of a friend. I know a producer who developed a careerbuilder.com, like he developed that site, sold that site, then used that money to then finance off Broadway shows. He just had a love for the arts and had money in his pocket that he was willing to spend and put towards helping get something off the small piddly community theater or college theater stage and get it into a little bit bigger. And when you're off Broadway, that could be anywhere. But once you have that money, once you can stick it in a theater that people actually buy season tickets to and go to, you're going to see brand new shows that could go the distance. And then you start getting, you go from just like maybe Chicago, the Marriott Theater in Chicago is a good example of a really cool theater. It's a big stage, but it's not like a prestigious theater, but it's bigger than community. And once it's there, once you're selling out tickets, then you can start, hey, we sold out 13 shows with 1,000 seats. Now we can start trying to find theaters in Broadway who are looking for surefire hits. So then you move from off, and then you're off Broadway, which is like you're in Manhattan, you're in New York, you're the one talked about. There are shows that once you're there, then the big Broadway theaters start vying for those small shows, and that's what In the Heights was. And that's what Hamilton was. Certainly there are theaters that are owned by, say, Disney owns a Broadway theater. They're just going to do Lion King. They're just going to do Tarzan. Right. Like, there's no, like, workshopping. It's just like, yeah, this is our next show. Once you can get to New York, once you can get people talking about your show, I mean, I don't, it's not easy. It is not easy at all. It, like I said, it does help to already be in the club, but it does happen. There are shows like Spring Awakening or, there was one that was this great riff on, well, Avenue Q would be a good example of like an upstart show that
an
literally
outsider.
Literally went on to win the Tony Award for Best Musical. That's the Best Picture Oscar in Broadway theater. Is the Tony Award for best new musical, best show. So that's what the process essentially looks like. There are certainly people out there who could speak on it better and more eloquently than I could, but it is a matter of, like, it just starts literally with two friends talking or a guy picking up a book in a bookstore at an airport and starting the writing process. Just like any artistic creative endeavor, it starts with that idea and builds and builds and builds from there. What makes the story of Alexander Hamilton, the play of Alexander Hamilton, and Lin-Manuel, there's a lot of parallels in a nobody that became a somebody, an immigrant who broke the scene, an upstart, an underdog, a rebel. There's a lot of parallels between Lin-Manuel's story and Hamilton's story and the play itself. And so there you go. There's a little bit of a background of how something goes from A to B.
Well, thank you. That was very good. And I know that you have a lot of insight. And I know, obviously, you are a playwright. You have a musical that you did on a smaller stage, like you had said. Mm-hmm. And you've had some high schools.
Yes. I wrote a stage musical, which for those connected to who are aware that we are Redacted Media, our short films, our online content and podcasts and whatnot that we have, the Princess Knight, the original stage show I did, we then developed into a feature film with puppets and not as many songs and an adaptation of the stage show. But yeah, we did a 13 show run in Burlington, Wisconsin at the Malthouse Theater, home of the Haylofters, which is a 90-year-old theater in Wisconsin. It's been around for 90 years. It used to be a brewery that they then turned into a stage theater. It's a sweet, awesome little place that I performed a few shows at in college and
nice.
I've always had an affection for. But yeah, then there's been some high schools that have also performed the show. I never dreamed or even thought to push it to try to get to that off Broadway experimentals. Like, accomplishing it in the way that we did was the dream come true for me. Although I often return to it, even after watching this show, I got my theater bug started biting me again. And I'm like, I dust off some of the tracks that we've been developing for studio recording. And I'm like, The Princess Knight will always be a big part of my life. And when I see stuff as quite frankly, as incredible as this show, I can't help but want to do that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit. So as a fan, so had you seen the show on stage at all? Like before?
A little background on me in regards to Hamilton. I understood the phenomena. I respect the phenomena, but I tried listening to it, just a random track. And I was like, is this a joke?
Oh,
Like I didn't get it. It didn't click with me. I didn't feel it. I just was like, well, I mean, cool. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of what sounded like spoken word. Spoken word annoys me.
Okay. Okay.
And it's not for everyone. And it's definitely not for me. So I respected it, but it wasn't for me. So I'd never seen it. I'd never even listened to a full song.
And so you had no interest when it was in LA. You had no interest of going to see. To see it at all?
No. That is how I approached the attitude. I approached it just to watch it for this show.
So harumph was basically not
exactly harumph, but just sort of like for example, Rent, when that was popular in the '90s, I respected it. I certainly liked a couple of the songs, But when it came down to it, I didn't understand why so many people loved that show. I still don't get it. All the characters in that movie or in that show are assholes.
Yeah.
I agree with you there. Yeah, so for me, I listened to the soundtrack. I loved it. I do have a high degree interest in musical theater.
I love musical theater. Yeah, I could talk ad nauseum about my love for musical theater.
Yeah, so like Les Mis and Book of Mormon,
yes.
Wicked, Avenue Q. Like I've seen all these shows, but they've always been the traveling show. I've seen Cats on Broadway.
Whoa, boy!
That was yeah. That was a long time ago. But and I was very interested in seeing this. I knew I'm not going to be in Manhattan anytime soon, so you know. But I can listen to the soundtrack. I can appreciate what's there. I can find, you know, learn more about Lin-Manuel Miranda, who, again, wrote everything. We're going to get into the music because that's anyway, you know, but unfortunately, by the time that they were traveling and the traveling show, so they came to my area because of the popularity of the show, the tickets were extremely expensive.
Yeah.
Very hard to come by. They were sold out very quickly. My sense was that, well, it's probably going to be, you know, the 2021, 2022 tour when I'll finally get to see them. When, you know, it's like Wicked. Wicked, the first year that Wicked came out, or the Book of Mormon, sold out for the...
Forget
the,
about it. Yeah.
Yeah, the tour. Like, there's no way I can go to it. But that second year...
Now
all
I'm
of a sudden, yeah, I can go in. I can make it. So, yeah. So when I heard that they were making a film of it, I was okay. This might be the best chance that I'll get to see it, and it turned out it was for not only me but most of the world
for everyone. Yeah, no
and
kidding.
I think Lin-Manuel said in an interview, like it's mind blowing to him that more people watched Hamilton on July 3rd than had seen it in the history of its production.
That is insane.
It's mind-blowing.
That is insane. Wow.
So, yeah. So, I was very, very excited. And I had actually, my wife, we had talked about musicals, and she was always like, I don't know. I don't like musicals so much. Turns out she doesn't like Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals.
Hey, I'm right there with you. Your wife is correct. Andrew Lloyd Webber, like people who love Jesus Christ Superstar and Phantom of the Opera, I'm like, pass. Hard pass. No, thank you. So, Andrew Lloyd Webber is like the only slightly better is like Rodgers and Hammerstein, which is like traditional Broadway.
Yeah.
I will take new Broadway all day. No, thank you with Andrew Lloyd Webber either.
So she's learned that because she enjoyed Wicked. She enjoyed Spam a lot. She enjoyed
Spam
all these musicals that I brought her to. Mm-hmm. And so she started to kind of see this. We'll get into the politics side of it later. I was excited. I hadn't seen it. I've seen snippets on YouTube and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously most of those videos are grainy. The audio is terrible. And, you know, the angles are just
it's
horrendous.
People pirating it illegally from their seat, yeah.
Right. And normally those aren't the people that are paying for those front row seats, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was excited to see it. So you came in with let's see what this is all about type of attitude.
Let's
not
check it out.
Close, but let's check it out. It's exciting.
I even had a moment of, oh, God. When I saw that it's almost 3 hours long, I was like, oh, boy. All right.
Well, there's an intermission.
That's true. It's like a two-minute intermission. Anyway, go ahead. Continue.
So what were you feeling at the end of Act 1?
Well, okay, but... even before getting to
even
Act
before
one,
that, yeah,
yeah. Let me say, as it started, as it got going, as it, like the first 20 to 30 minutes. So like the first really, you know, I'm in it now. I thought this is what I was expecting. This is it's a gorgeous set. It's mm-hmm. gorgeous costuming. Like it's Broadway. It's gonna be pinnacle looking.
Yeah,
our art. And okay, to say this to someone who might be listening to this podcast as we're talking, who might be interested but not sure what they're getting themselves into, it was a bit like going to see a Shakespeare show or watching a Shakespeare movie. It's a different language. It's English, but it's a different language, and it takes a moment or two or a bit for your mind to adjust to how you're being spoken to or sung to in this case. It was actually, I marked it. Hold on a second. I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. It was Renee Goldsberry's Never Be Satisfied song, which is about yes. like about the 30 minute mark. I was in that. That was yeah. the moment where I was like chills. It was this show stopping. Her voice was gorgeous. Like the storytelling in that song in particular, I was like moved. I said, oh, OK, yes. Yes, this is spectacular. I'm getting it now. I see now where, okay, let's see if they can keep this level of awesome in my eyes. So, and they did. Like from that point on, and it could have been that my mind adjusted to hearing how I'm being spoke to, much like mm-hmm. the Shakespeare equivalent. But after that point, I was on board, because it is. It's straight up singing for 2 hours and 40 minutes. And so by the end of by the time intermission hit, I was like, cool. All right, cool. I'm going to take a break here and take an intermission myself and then get right back in for Act Two. So, yeah, it won me over at that point. Her song was phenomenal.
Yeah. And that to me is one of the many standout songs. But yeah, because there is a lot, like with anything, this is a two-act musical.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, I think a lot of people are used to, like, the three acts, especially in films.
Sure, sure. With musicals, traditionally you'll get two acts. You'll get stuff that's three or five, depending on what you're watching. But it's typically an intermission in the middle. Yeah.
And typically, you know, so in the front, I mean, you're world-establishing, character-establishing. So those aren't necessarily the most exciting things. Plus, the first song covers like the first 18 years of Alexander Hamilton's life.
Yeah, yeah. From,
you know,
from,
so there's a lot going on in that song. Now, one thing that this, while it is 3 hours, it's a very fast 3 hours.
Yeah, by that point, once I was hooked, it has a great pace to it. And there really is something incredible about the sound design, the sound quality of what you're watching. When you see a professionally done show, it's going to sound good. But to watch musicals and plays on video or recording of it, that you're at the risk of how they captured the audio. And this was just crystal clear. You can understand every word that is being uttered, which was a fear of mine at first, in terms of, okay, I understand this is a hip hopera, is how much of this is going to be machine gun rapping.
Yeah.
And there is some of that in there, but you may think you're a good singer, you may think you're a good actor, but what puts people at a Broadway level is diction and articulation and enunciation, to be able to spew that much information so coherently is incredible to me. And it's mesmerizing. This, you're right. It clips along really nicely. Yeah.
So if the passages were, if the pace was as a standard musical would be, it's been mapped out to be anywhere from 4 to 6 hours. That's how long this would be. Ugh. They average
I didn't
they average about 144 words per minute.
Wow. That's incredible.
Anywhere from, you know, with some going up as 200 words per minute.
Incredible.
There are
You said it was a thick book.
Yeah. David Diggs, who plays, he has two roles. He's Lafayette and he's Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
As Lafayette, he has a section where he says 19 words in 3 seconds.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, him and the guy who played Hercules Mulligan.
Yeah.
Did dual roles. They're one character's in Act One, another character in Act Two. And credit to them to be able to create such vastly different characters, but 19 words for a set. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, and you know, David Diggs has a background in that. I just wonder, like, when he left, like, finding someone that can speak.
Oh my God. Yeah. That audition process.
Oh man. Yeah. So it moves fast. And like you said, it is very much a, there's only the first time that there is spoken word is Hamilton's last song, which is the second to last song of the entire show.
Wow. Yeah. there's no dialogue in this. It's all singing.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I was hooked pretty. I was ready to go. The only thing that could have happened is, and what I was nervous about was being disappointed. Like that my hype was too high, that I would see it and be like, oh, that's it?
It wasn't as good as I had hoped, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, this was, to me, the performances and all that, this was so much better than what the soundtrack, the original Broadway cast soundtrack that came out
In
2017, 2016.
Right.
Because, again, they're capturing the live performance, so it's going to be different than standing in a sound booth.
With headphones on in front of a microphone.
Redoing, right. Because now you're in it. You're that character. You're doing it. This is what they've been practicing for so long.
Sure.
All right. So what any guesses on some of the you know what? It's going to be impossible for you to guess. So some of the influences that Lin-Manuel has said. So two of the non-musical ones would be Harry Potter.
Okay, interesting.
Okay, so if you know, both were young when they discovered that they had a power. So Harry was a wizard,
and Hamilton
had his brain. He was able to write and dictate, and he was smarter than everyone else. And then another one was West Wing.
Sure.
The TV show. Oh, Alan Sorkin going back, you know, fast.
The Aaron Sorkin scripts are usually like twice as long, but they're faster.
Yeah. As far as musical goals, and let me know how many of these you've seen. So, Evita.
Yep, I've seen. Yep.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
I'll give a big thumbs down to that one. Thank you. You didn't need to be influenced by. Oh, I see. He took influence of what not to do. Very smart, Lin-Manuel. Very smart.
The Last 5 Years.
Okay, I've not seen that show. I'm familiar with it though.
In the Heights, which makes sense. Bringing on the Musical.
Oh, great! That makes sense. I can see that.
Yep. Les Mis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly.
South Pacific.
Yep.
Pirates of Penzance. Yeah. And then 1776 was another one.
Great. Yeah, those are some. I can see all those influences. Like that makes sense in knowing Broadway and knowing musical theater, and then seeing Hamilton. That makes sense. That those would all be in there.
Yep. So yeah, and obviously there's more.
Sure.
You know, these are just some of the sources that I saw, like some of the influences and some of the lines too. Right. He's taking lines from the Click Click Boom. You said that was one of the first shows that he became known.
That's Jonathan Larson's show.
And Click Click Boom, he uses that in here as well. So he pulls a lot of that and does it well.
Just for that one person who's like, you're saying it wrong. It's Tick, Tick, Boom is tick, the name tick, of boom. The show, but Click, yeah. Click, Boom is the dialogue or the lyric. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you.
I hate someone to at you for this.
Hey, you know what, though? If they at me, that means they listen to it.
That's true. So, that's true. At him, folks. I shouldn't have corrected you. I should have let it sit.
Yeah. Yeah. I could Conan it and just change history. So let's talk a little bit about some of the performances. Now, most of the lead characters, lead actors, won Tonys for their performances or won some other awards. See, I mean, this was a very decorated cast. And I think like some people only lost because they were up against fellow cast members. Lin-Manuel, when he wrote this, he gave himself the choice. He could either be Hamilton or he could have been Burr.
Burr, yeah.
And he said the reason he did it is because being a, he's only been cast in roles where he's kind of that second fiddle to a white guy.
Sure.
Unless he wrote them. He did say he gave Burr the best songs.
Well, Leslie Odom Jr. singing anything is going to be amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So Leslie Odom Jr. is Aaron Burr. What do you think of the two leads, the two main characters?
I certainly could go. I have a lot of long-winded things to say about the cast in general, I'll get into that for in a moment here. But Lin-Manuel playing this meek voice but powerful writer, hello, sir. Yes, sir, and Leslie Odom's Aaron Burr being so confident from the get-go. Like, they're great characters, and they're performed so well. They have a great chemistry with each other. There's not a bad person in this cast.
No.
Even as simple as the girl who comes and hands King George the message that John Adams is going to be president.
Yeah.
He's like, even her, like, just she's so expressive and did an amazing job.
We will talk specifically about her because there's something really? Very interesting. Okay. Yes. And okay, this will make you, this may make you want to watch it again, by the way, some of these things we're going to talk about.
All right. Go ahead. I have some more thoughts.
One thing with Burr and Hamilton, and this is very subtle, and this is, we're going to get to this a lot. I think the subtlety in so much of this musical is one reason that it shines and one reason that you can watch it over and over and over again. If you watch in a musical, Aaron Burr only walks in straight lines.
Interesting.
Like his direction is only in straight lines because he doesn't see the world. He doesn't see any options.
Wow.
With his choice. Hamilton always walks in arcs.
Wow. That's incredible. And I'm picturing now there's a moment where the stage rotated in pieces.
Yeah.
And Aaron is standing still and Hamilton's rotating around him on the stage. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's
incredible. So like those little things that kind of show those character.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's workshopped out, right? Especially those actors when they first get their role and they're kind of figuring out who they are and, unlike a lot of musicals and a lot of play, I mean, some plays are based on real characters, real people that lived at one point. But, people know George Washington, people know Thomas Jefferson. Like, these aren't people that are historical, but kind of not known.
Burr and Hamilton is what you mean. Yeah.
Burr, Hamilton as well. I mean, like almost all the characters in here. Yes, there are some that we learn about and we'll talk specific about them. What about all the other, you have a long diatribe you said about all the entire cast. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. Let me go there.
Down.
First of all, I'm aware of how little qualification I have to speak on this, but it's worth addressing because when this movie dropped, there was someone who decided to be a bit to make themselves a meme, saying that Americans right now, no one can play as someone of another skin color. The founding fathers were racist slave owners and shouldn't be honored. Hamilton the musical, and then a funny little cartoon character looking left and right. And it was a short-sighted, ignorant commentary on just, listen, this cast of characters are people of color, are immigrants, are children of immigrants playing our white founding fathers. And again,
immigrants or children of immigrants at the time.
So I always, every now and then I feel compelled online to, you're never going to win an argument online. You're never going to sway anyone's opinion. But in this state of things now, it's a matter of like, if you see something and can't say something, say something. And Hamilton doesn't change the races of the characters in the story that's being told. The cast are storytellers of America today, specifically people of color, American people of color, telling the story, which is an immigrant story, of America then, right? And I know it is pointless to try to like get through to people who can't see the sense in the, or the art of that, or the logic of it. You know, it's too long of an answer that I doubt any one person is going to read. But it's the goal of casting people of color rather than like historically accurate whites was to portray the story of America from its historical past through the eyes of the voices of America now. And I have a quote from Lin-Manuel Miranda who said, "This is as much an artistic choice as much as it is a political one. If your production of Hamilton features the founding fathers who look like the real ones, you're doing it wrong. The multiracial cast of Hamilton is so, so important because it is a representation of the innovation immigrant culture that immigrant culture provides to the growth of America," right? And he was Hamilton's from the West Indies. There's a vital theme of immigration in American identity, and Lin-Manuel like used that to tell his story. There's even the great line where it's like, "Immigrants, we get the job done." Like that's gets a great laugh. It's freaking true, and it's a beautiful. There, you can find interviews with Lin-Manuel talking specifically on this, but if people are too close-minded to appreciate that choice, move along. This isn't for you. You're not going to be educated. I'm sorry. You're just ignorant.
Well, and it's not the other criticism that I had read is that, well, this isn't historically accurate. It's like any movie based on real events is not historically accurate.
Dramatized for entertainment purposes, of course.
Right. It's fan fiction, and you, as an artist, you, if you're basing something on real characters, real people, you have to do things with a dramatic license. You have to make things more interesting.
Yeah.
Otherwise, read a book.
Yeah. This is an excellent, excellent history lesson. I was going to plug this later, not plug it because it's not mine to plug, but mention this later. So I might as well do it now. This is American history. This is American history that you can watch and absorb and ideally get cliff notes or very well sung cliff notes of American history that should lead you to ask questions. And I can't recommend it enough. Seek out Drunk History's episode of Alexander Hamilton, starring Lin-Manuel Miranda. Aaliyah Shawkat and Aubrey Plaza play Hamilton and Burr. And then you can get Lin-Manuel speaks specifically about the differences between what he wrote versus what actually happened. So you can get more information about this pivotal character, these pivotal characters in American history. It's beautiful. It's great. It's a good way to trick people into learning things.
Well, yeah, just the whole concept of that show is brilliant. But yeah, with this show, and I know something that the cast has talked about as well, while we may know a lot of these characters, one of the lines is about how Hamilton has kind of been forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But he isn't the only one. Like, you look at Eliza, his wife.
Yes,
you look at
making the
Angelica.
Orphanage.
Mm-hmm. You look at all these other, you know, Hercules Mulligan, who, when you hear that name, you think, oh, that's clearly made up. No, that was a real guy.
What a great name. What a great
real
character.
Guy.
Yeah.
And again, these are all people that had a profound impact on our country.
They talk about it, and it's the final songs talking about who's going to write the story, who's going to write your story, who's going to the final moments of Eliza gasping is the last moments of the show. And yeah, there's who gets to write history, who gets to write your legacy, who's going to write your story. And to go back to what even initiated this conversation about how great the cast is, how great the performances are in here, it makes me want to, that it makes me wonder just how many other key moments in history would benefit from something like this.
Yeah.
Would benefit from a show like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know one thing that the cast definitely talks about, like, you know, there's been a couple interviews, like, you know, asking, you know, is there going to be a Hamilton 2? Which there's not.
No.
But why is just that like what can we do now? And I think Leslie Odom Jr. suggested, like, find these lost people. Mm-hmm. Find these lost histories and become aware of them. Find what, you know, and people that you know, find out who they really were. I mean, yeah. I grew up in my school, and I'm sure your school was similar, but, you know, I'm thinking back to all my history classes. I don't remember much negative about George Washington, about right. Thomas Jefferson. You know, but you look at them, they were slave owners. They owned slaves.
Even Hamilton himself was an adulterer. Like, there's nothing, right. And they don't glorify that. He pays the consequences for that.
Right. And, you know, but seeking that out to find truly who it's not to say that people can't do great things. And also, I mean, everyone has their light and their dark side.
Sure. I didn't mean to even imply that the flaws just make him more human.
Right. And and that's the thing. They all are human. They all have flaws. Yeah. They knew there was an understanding from both Thomas Jefferson and George Washington that slavery was wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yet it also created a lot of their wealth.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so much in this show that is so parallel to what we're going through today, which is deliberate.
Well, most of it was written, you know, starting in 2009 when the idea started, and it was on Broadway when Obama was president. So it's not like this stuff was written as Trump was and all that. It's just
as far as American politics are concerned. And the socio-economical politics of this country are concerned, there's still so much today from 2015, from 2000, from 1900, from beyond that still just keeps echoing over and over and over again.
Well, heck, I mean, going back to history class, like, it was Revolutionary War, you learn about that. Mm-hmm. You learn about the Civil War.
Yep.
And then World War II.
Yeah, it's
there's a lot of gaps. And learning that Eliza lived, she died in like 1852. She died at the cusp of the Civil War.
She lived 50 years after.
50 years after. So she lived to be like 97 or something like that.
Which is pretty incredible today, let alone back then.
Pretty incredible today. I mean, so that's crossing over the last daughter of a Confederate soldier just died.
Wow. It's you
she was about, getting she was getting government money still, because the government, when they signed the deal, like, so the last daughter of a Confederate soldier just died.
Ugh,
in 2020.
Incredible.
Not like 10 years ago, 2020. No, so it's to me, like, there is no gap. Right. And I think that's kind of what this is showing. Like, what you learn about what happens at the time and place, you know, the Constitutional Convention and the founding of the United States, the writing of the Constitution. There's a lot more. And so I think their point is, find that out. Look that up. If you're interested in this, do that. That's what's forgotten. That's what history books gloss over in school.
I'd say 2 points to that. One, unless your school is named after a place, you mentioned your high school. I honestly don't know who Mary Bradford was. That's the high school I went to, is Mary D. Bradford High School in Kenosha. I don't know who she is. I know nothing about her. I went to her school, for a school named after her, for 4 years of my life, and I have no idea who she is. And that's a shame. You'd think they would tell us that at least one day in history class at school.
Right.
My middle school, I don't know who that guy was. But even to speak about the people in your lives the history around you that you might not be aware of. My job right out of college with my writing degree was I wrote obituaries. Oh. I would sit on the phone with people who had just lost loved ones. They would tell their story, and I would have to figure out how to fit that on an eighth of a page. And the truth is stranger than fiction, as the old adage goes. History is full of heroes and villains.
Yeah.
There's just not enough time for school to educate you on. So it really important to have people like Lin-Manuel to craft a story like this. Another recommendation, if you dig Alexander Hamilton and you want a little bit more traditional Broadway show, look up the show Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, which is a historical musical about one of our most violent and vile presidents in history. So that you can find the whole show on YouTube. You can listen to the whole original soundtrack. And it's similarly this enlightening piece of American history that you may have heard of the Trail of Tears. It may have come up recently in watching the news in the past year or so, or since the pipeline was trying to go through in North Dakota. Like,
what just came out for the Supreme Court in Oklahoma.
Yeah. It's so these pieces of American history, because what people don't, I think we live in this weird, okay, how often are our founding fathers' names evoked by politicians, people trying to prove their points? Those people don't know what they're talking about. To quote George Washington without the true context of what he and or Alexander Hamilton wrote for George Washington.
Right.
Try to even read one of the Federalist Papers. That thing is long. Like, to evoke Abraham Lincoln for the Republican Party is utter nonsense. Just because we know Lincoln as the mythological legend, this god, this demigod that he is to American history, the people who are quoting him and evoking his name don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I mean this to people who, I obviously not everyone, because there are people who, it goes to people who are trying to evoke Martin Luther King Jr.'s name for their conservative Republican values, when it's like, sorry, hate to tell you, MLK was a liberal, like a socialist liberal. Like, screw you for trying to use his name or Abraham Lincoln's name. Like, sorry, I'm getting around. I'm sorry. This is a political movie we're talking about, so we can't not talk about politics.
I know, and we had to get that in, and we were going to talk about politics, but let's focus on a couple of the characters. Let's get back to the show.
The show itself, this wonderful, beautiful show. Yeah.
What do you think about the? We're stick with Act One characters. So you have the Schuyler sisters, so the three female leads. With the Jasmine Cephas Jones, I believe.
Yep,
she also had a dual role. So she played Peggy in the front, and then she played Maria in the second act.
I see. Yep.
The temptress.
Oh, yes. Again, everyone in this cast is incredible. The sisters themselves, it's so his wife was incredible, but Eliza's got the showstopper that hooked me on the show. And she's it's this weird, it delves into modernisms in terms of like relationships, but like his affection for two women at once. He married one. He had obviously a crush on another, just to put it lightly. But those two performances are just outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, and I know this goes through the casting and all that, but just the harmonies and the just how well they sound together and the comfort obviously that the cast has with each other.
Yeah.
It's just for now, again, they've been doing this for a year together. So it's not like it's anything new. Another first act character. Well, we'll throw John Lawrence. Well, let's talk John Lawrence because that actor, Anthony Ramos, he gets the pleasure of being killed in both acts.
Yep.
So to me, like when his performance was great, but I mean he's got two of the more tear jerking moments.
Certainly, more so on the second one,
yeah. But the first one, when it comes, so we transitioned from Theodosia, just probably my favorite song, about Burr and Hamilton both singing about their newborn kids.
Yes,
and just how their life is going to change and how much they love them and how much they're going to do for them. And they both were orphans and how they're not going to let their kids become orphans.
Yeah.
Beautiful, gorgeous song. At the end of that song, it's delivered to Hamilton that his best friend was killed in a skirmish that happened after the war was done.
Yeah. Survived the war and couldn't survive after the war.
Yeah. And then in Act Two, as Philip Schuyler, he dies killed in probably the saddest scene in that, it.
Yeah. The point your gun in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the whole first act, throwing away your shot. I'm not going to throw away my shot. In the second act, throw away your shot.
Yeah.
That's what it was, and that came directly from the Chernow book, from when I read that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's from, oh wait, no, he got it from the book, not the other way around. Okay,
yeah.
I got it. You got George Washington, played by Chris Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
He is the only cast member, I believe, that was the original cast member in the Heights as well as Lin-Manuel.
Yes, yes.
Obviously.
You know, it's funny mentioning Chris Jackson. There were 2 points when I was listening to one of the songs where I was like, I know this voice. And listening to Chris Jackson singing, I'm like, that's Simba. That's Simba from the Broadway Lion King, which is a phenomenal show as it is. So I recognize it. And then I realized Leslie Odom and Lin-Manuel, I recognize their voices from Tick, Tick, Boom. Their duet, which you had mentioned, or Theodosia, I was like, oh, I've heard these two voices on my CD player. but continue, sorry.
Yep. Then you have David Diggs, who we said already was Marquis de Lafayette, and Thomas Jefferson. Now, he does not have a Broadway or singing background. He's an actor. He's on a rap hip hop comedy. Like improv group.
He has some of the best comedic moments, like the best moments of levity.
And, but like he always talked about, like he was afraid of singing on stage, like, cause he's not a singer.
Right.
And he was told by the director, like, you don't just be your character. So then he really looked at basing his character as, you know, like bringing in influence. So like Jefferson, big influence in that was Prince.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't quite see that, but that's the flamboyance is there for
the
sure.
Flamboyance is there, kind of the walk and all that. you know, and you also, as Lafayette, you see a lot of like, he starts out like very much like 80s, you know, they compared it to 80s rap where it's like kind of learning what is rap going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, he's going triple time with his rapping. Like he is just
the evolution of rap over with Lafayette. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. You have, I am just going to call him by his nickname. Oak, who played Hercules Mulligan and James Madison.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even gonna try.
You're not gonna slaughter that name. No. That's great. Oh my gosh, his Hercules is so great because he does that very guttural, like, oh yeah, like his. I'm such a white boy right now. Like, well, his guttural like rapping was so cool. Like, yeah.
And my wife pointed out, like, okay, so this is. For as far as the musical goes, they are basically running all over the stage all the time and dancing at the same time and singing.
Yep.
And the ensemble, like, it's crazy the amount of movement that this whole cast is doing.
Mm-hmm.
He, the first entire act, has a wool hat on.
he's got a beanie on. Yeah,
he's got
right.
a beanie on the entire. Time. I just can't imagine the sweat pouring down him. Why that choice was made, whatever, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was crazy. and then you have Jonathan Groff.
As King George.
As King Wonderful. George, who da, actually da, da, came
da.
Came back. He was already off.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him to come back. So that they could film it with the original Broadway cast.
Sure, yeah. I wouldn't say no to that.
No. But which the Rory O'Malley, who was playing King George at the time, was gracious enough to take a break.
Sure.
Says this. but King George was also played by the one person that I know. Taron Killam.
From SNL, that's right.
From SNL. He had a run as King George. So King George comes in with very much a Beatles sound. That's mm-hmm. the musical inspiration for King George. And the "You'll Be Back" line came from Hugh Laurie, who Lin-Manuel had worked with on what was his show? The Doctor Show.
House. Yeah.
And so he got the, because Hugh Laurie is a comedian from Britain.
That's right.
So he came up with that line. So
"You'll be back."
Yeah. And a lot of people talked after they saw this. I talked about Jonathan Groff's spitting.
Go ahead, continue.
If you see it again, you'll mm-hmm. you'll see the spitting. And what was told to me, or what I had read, wasn't really told to me. I wasn't talking to somebody. I was reading it, so I don't know. Maybe, but there are. I mean, many people when they sing like that, they're spitters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and I think not only Broadway, but just music in general. Like, you see some video footage of live concert footage of some rock star. There's a lot of spit flying out there. It's just natural.
Sure.
Right. So I think it's surprising when there's a scene where there's a close-up on the first song of King George.
Mm-hmm.
And he yells, "No, don't change the subject." There's a lot of spit that comes out of his mouth. And to which I had read that, for many of these Broadway shows, if you're in the first few rows.
Wow.
You may get spit on.
Oh, my. I got spit on by Jonathan Groff. At Hamilton, oh my gosh.
He played Kristoff.
In Frozen, yeah.
but yeah, so they like when I think Jonathan Groff said something like, "Thank goodness for the instrumental."
Oh, the orchestra
sit.
Pit. The orchestra
yeah,
pit.
Because they get showered in spit.
That's funny.
Just one of the things. So yeah, so it was interesting he came back. Sorry, I'm just looking over my notes.
Oh, that's
quick,
fine.
Because I know we want to get a lot. There's a lot here.
Okay.
Yeah, so I talked before about some of the subtlety. Like, you had, Burr always walked in straight lines. Hamilton always walked in arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had like the Lafayette 80s rap to more modern fast rap. You had George Washington, who delivered every note on beat because he's regimented.
Yeah, he's a general. Yeah.
As a general. Mm-hmm. So, like, you listen to his performance and it's boom, 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 very, boom, boom, boom. Like,
very staccato.
It's, yeah. You know, and there is a very interesting, I cannot recommend this enough. It's a YouTube series by a gentleman named Howard Ho, H-O.
Mm-hmm.
He breaks down the actual music, not the lyrics, but the music,
mm-hmm.
and how it pushes. So he breaks down like the Hamilton chord progression. So things that, you know, come from that Alexander Hamilton song,
yeah.
things that come from the Aaron Burr song, the second song
mm-hmm.
of it, and how that progresses and how it ties different songs and different moods together. How like three notes in the Alexander Hamilton song, which are hopeful, in later songs are now reversed to show like how down he is.
Wow.
He breaks down how there are methods that Lin-Manuel used that invoke tears. Like, here's what he does.
He manipulated my brain and heart.
To make you cry. Well, I mean, using, like, some classical, like, ways to make, you know, to, like, make the music cry, which mm-hmm. invokes that emotion in you as you're listening to it.
Fascinating.
And doing, like, little things, like, the subtle things, like, the little, like, there's a couple songs that have a little record scratch in the beginning.
Sure.
And
I can remember.
In what that represents. And, like, with the turntable. What that represents when it's going one way versus the other way.
Interesting. Oh my! I mean, I might actually watch this again.
Yeah, it's really it really helps you see how much the music drives the emotion and the characters within it and what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend that series. I mean, he's a brilliant musician too. It sounds like he's sampling the stuff on his own piano and kind of showing you everything. So you could learn how to play some of the Hamilton stuff on the piano by watching this too.
Wow. Okay.
Which is cool.
Howard Ho.
Howard Ho. Oh, what was the other thing I was going to talk about?
I don't know.
I know. I just got so into Howard Ho. How Hamilton works. Well, oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The last thing I'll bring up, because we're about an hour right now. So
sure, sure, sure.
And I feel like just where I am now with Hamilton, and I think where you've become, like, this is something, there's so much, there's so many layers and all that in here. you had mentioned a character before, the one that whispers.
Oh, yes.
To the king about. So she overall is a special character, and as you watch it again,
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, the first time that King George speaks, her character is actually killed.
Oh,
there's like a spy that kills her. For the rest of the musical, she is known as the Bullet.
Oh, so she's the one moving the bullet at the
she's
end
the
of
one
the
moving the bullet
of the show.
She also is the last one to have contact with John Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
She's basically, you know, like, she will be the last one to talk to Philip Schuyler.
So she's killed. She's like the harbinger over here. That's amazing. Yeah. That's very cool.
She lines up like when they're doing different dances and all that, if they're lined up, she'll be the last, like, she'll be lined up next to Hamilton or next mm-hmm. to whoever is going to die.
Wow.
And oftentimes, like, she'll be the last one to move out of her position.
Mm-hmm. That sort of thing, talking about the walking in straight lines and the arches and creating a character like that, that I would wager wasn't in none of the movement stuff. Maybe not even the character like that was in the script. That's something a director would come up with in theater. Maybe Lin-Manuel conceptualized it, but that is something discovered in the workshopping process. That is the in the hands of a competent director who will create, you're moving in a straight line, you're moving in arches. I wonder if she was created in that respect as well. Wow, that's very cool. I'm going to keep my eye out for now.
Yeah, so I have seen it twice. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I, we watched it once when it came out, and then in preparation for this, we kind of watched it
again,
kind of broken up though this time. And yeah, it was very interesting, kind of keeping an eye on her and just keep an eye on some of the other movement going on with some of the other ensemble. Because mm-hmm. many of the ensemble, they also play a titled character, you know, which happens. You're not going to have an actor for every single role. You're going to have some that play multiple roles because it's theater and you can only have so many people on stage at once. And obviously you have to pay everybody.
I will guarantee any high school that does this show is going to not cast Thomas Jefferson and Lafayette as the same actor, but that's just because it's high school and everyone's got to have
high school.
Professionally, well, and they got to pay everybody.
Yeah. They're not getting paid. It's experience that they get paid with.
That's right.
So yeah, and she was a character that was in, yeah, she was on the Broadway from the very beginning, and yeah, she was she said, I think, in an interview, like, she was pulled aside, and it's like she was pulled aside to say, this is what your role is, like, you are the bullet, and you see at the end when Aaron Burr shoots his gun at Alexander Hamilton, the cat to allow Alexander to say everything he needs to say before he dies, the other cast block her away.
Oh, they like keep her away. Oh,
keep
wow.
Keep her away.
That's incredible.
So that he can get through everything he needs to say until he's ready.
Wow. I'm going to have to scrub through this and watch moments again. Cause this is, I love it. That's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, this level of detail is again, I think you can write a phenomenal musical and not have this detail in there. Mm-hmm. But when you add this in, it makes it, well, A, rewatchable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also, like, you learn so much and you appreciate, and plus you give those ensemble members more to do than just dancing around and adding their voices.
100%,
right?
Yeah.
Like, and you get them into the show and they love it.
Mm-hmm.
We could keep going.
I will give some final thoughts here. Coming in with a bit of like, okay, let's see what this is all about. Again, I understood the importance of the show. I respected this show. I just didn't quite think it was going to be for me. And finally sitting down, finally experiencing it. I love musical theater. I did musical theater in high school and college. I wrote a freaking musical theater show. Like, I love theater. So I had a feeling that I never thought I was going to hate it. I never thought I was going to dislike it. I just wasn't sure it was going to be for me. And honestly, just watching it the one time for this, I see why so many people love this show. And now hearing all these fine details from you and learning more about the history of the show, the details of the show, it's making me like it even more. And so if you like musicals, if you like freaking Little Mermaid, so you do like musicals, even though it's a cartoon, if you have an interest in just good storytelling, history, music, not just musicals, but music, hip hop, there's something here that's worth watching and worth exploring. I honestly, if I just say it's a musical and that turns you off, fine. That's whatever, you don't care. But if you have even a remote interest in this, seek it out, find a friend with a Disney Plus account and check this movie out. Or at the very least, listen to the score. You can find it on Spotify. You can find it on YouTube.
It'd be brilliant if Disney Plus sponsored us, but they don't. But you can get a 30-day free trial. Yeah, Disney Plus account.
Watch that and The Mandalorian. You're set.
Yep. I do want to add in the other person that I had heard of before that was in the show. Wayne Brady had a run in Chicago as Aaron Burr.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Okay. That's cool.
So, yeah. Like I said before, I think we could talk much more about this. We could get into the songs themselves. We could talk about what was your favorite song, all that. But, you know, we should probably wrap this up soon. But it met all my, it exceeded all my high expectations.
It exceeded mine as well.
Yeah. I mean, and I still want to see this live on stage.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing that could compare to the live experience.
Yeah, I mean that this was close. This was good. Like this is the best I've ever seen of a filmed version of a stage musical.
Agreed.
Like this I mean, I've seen Newsies, that's also on Disney Plus right now. Mm-hmm. And it's good, but you know, again, you don't get that same feelings that I think you do when you see the stage show.
Yeah.
And I think you get some of that. I mean, without seeing Hamilton on stage, just some of the feelings that I got from other musicals, which, you know, much better seats that I could never afford.
So, I want to be in the spit row. What's the spittle row?
First couple rows. Yeah. Try to capture some of that Jonathan Groff spit.
Yeah.
So that you can clone them then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was great. I'm very glad to have done this, and I'm glad you suggested it. This was excellent. I don't know if I would have watched this if it hadn't been for this. Maybe I would have gotten around to it eventually, but I'm great. Thank you for giving me this chance to watch it and discuss it. And you're right, we could talk for another 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean we really have barely covered even the songs, right?
Sure.
Like barely. Like we didn't really get into the songs, so yeah. We have a musical and we didn't talk about the songs, so that's awesome.
we'll do a second one after Julia has seen it.
That's true. Yeah, maybe we'll do that. All right, well, thank you, TC, for joining me on this.
Thank you, Shulzy.
Do you plan on trying to see this on stage then too?
Yeah, if given the chance, when the world allows Broadway to open back up and theaters to open back up. So what, 5 years from now? Given the chance to see this, I will take it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. This has been our show today. I know I'm forgetting some things I wanted to talk about, but like we said, we could have a Hamilton part two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Yep. See you next time, everyone.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net.